Okay, so we will now have a look at the sort of major features of LTE and LTE Advanced. So seeing how they've evolved to meet the 4G specification. And the major technological underpinning is going to be, again, the OFDM and the MIMO. So LTE stands for long-term evolution, and LTE advanced, and is long-term evolution advanced, and they represent 3GPP's proposed evolution from UMTS to 4G specifications. LTE doesn't completely satisfy 4G requirements, so it's frequently called 3.99G. And it's summarized in 3GPP releases 8 and 9. LTE Advanced fully satisfies the 4G requirements. It's certified as IMT Advanced compliant, and it's described in 3GPP's release 10. The main changes for LTE regard the air interface, again trying to get these very high data rates, but the network architecture is also evolving, and essentially it's moving to a more data-centric, packet-oriented, IP-oriented network. Yeah. So, system architecture evolution refers to the evolution in the core network, and it evolves the GPRS UMTS core with a number of changes. It simplifies the architecture into an all IP format, and then works to support the high throughput and low latency for the radio access networks, and provides support for mobility between multiple heterogeneous radio access networks. And so within the SAE core, you should be able to, again, have handover between GSM, WiMAX, whatever systems there are. And so this is the basic structure. And again, the idea is that it will sort of coexist with other network technologies. And we see for LTE, we have our base stations are called E-Node Bs, and they communicate directly with an SAE gateway. This SAE gateway also interfaces with the packet handling functions for sort of previous network generations, such as SGSN, or such as the serving gateway for GSM, your CDMA packet gateway, and also other, it should interface with other access technologies, such as WiMAX. The other key entity is the MME, the Mobility Management Entity, and that is, as it says, responsible for dealing with user mobility, both in the sense of tracking users through the network and also allowing them to move from one network to another. The channel structure for LTE is similar to that of UMTS in the sense that it has physical transport and logical channels, and they fulfill roughly the same functions that they would have before. Again, obviously they're detailed, they're geared to the specifics of LTE now, but again, they do more or less the same thing, so I'm not going to list them out yet again. They reference, if you're curious, you can look at the reference I've provided. And again, there's a lot of changes to the physical layer to enable sort of high bitrate, high capacity links. And so the links are OFDM based. We'll look at the downlinks and the uplinks separately, since they're handled somewhat separately. On the downlink, LTE uses OFDM combined with some sort of modulation, either QPSK, 16 QAM or 64 QAM. So that means you can have 2, 4, or 6 bits represented per signaling element. Okay. And again, LTE divides its channels up according to both frequency and time. So a signaling element is sort of the smallest element of resource that one can get, and it has a frequency bandwidth of 15 kilohertz and a time duration of 0.5 divided by 7 microseconds. And this is related to the representation of the symbol using OFDM. It's 1 over delta F plus the cyclic duration of the cyclic prefix. The symbols then are grouped into resource blocks, and this is a block both in time and in frequency, and so it's of 180 kilohertz in the frequency domain and half a millisecond in the time domain. And then users are allocated resources at this block level. And exactly what resources there, how many blocks they're allocated, is the result of a quality of service negotiation with the network. And so here we see how the channels are divided out. So we have our single resource element, and that's the resources that are needed to send one symbol. And of course, that symbol can again represent 2 to 6 bits, depending. And they're not allocated on an element by element basis, but rather in blocks. And each block consists of 12 subcarriers and 7 time slots. So a total of 84 resource elements. And then a user can be allocated 1 or more blocks, depending. So that's how the resources are allocated on the downlink. On the uplink, LTE uses what's called single carrier frequency division multiple access, And this is a pre-coded form of OFDM. And the resources here are grouped to optimize power control in a fairly complex fashion. So, one of the goals of 4G networks is not just to, sort of, again, get high data rates, but also to deal with multimedia traffic, so traffic that has different requirements for the resources it's allocated. And so on the downlink, quality of service is negotiated with the network on the level of a packet flow, where a packet flow is a data flow between the network gateway and the user terminal. Okay. Now the flow itself can be subdivided into multiple applications, but they will then all receive the same quality of service guarantees. The negotiation results in the assignment of a QoS class identifier to the packet flow. And so this class identifier, again, indicates the resources that the packet flow is entitled to. And there's a number of parameters associated with each different class identification. So the resource type, so you can have a guaranteed bit rate or a non-guaranteed bit rate. The priority, and the priority is used in sort of determining admission to the network, and also who gets dropped in the case of congestion. Packet delay and packet error rate. And so admission into the network is dependent on your QCI. So if you have, for instance, a requirement of guaranteed resources, you're only going to be admitted if that can be honored. And similarly, you might be dropped if you don't have a requirement of guaranteed resources. You might be one of the first to be dropped out of the network as well. Okay. And furthermore, the scheduling, the allocation of resources is also dependent on your QCI. Okay, so this table summarizes the 9 classes that have been defined in terms of the parameters, so your resource type, your priority, packet delay, and packet error. And the network then seeks to allocate resources so that all of these requirements are met. Okay, we seem to have a duplicate slide here. Okay, so in addition to OFDM, LTE makes use of MIMO. In the uplink direction, multi-user MIMO is used, and here it's assumed that each mobile user has a single antenna, and so multiple users can transmit in the same resource element, and then MIMO can be used in the same resource block, and MIMO can be used to distinguish at the base station between these different users. In the downlink direction, a 2x2 configuration is assumed, 4x4 is being considered, and this is used for spatial diversity and not to increase data rates. So it's used to improve the quality of the signal, not not to send more data. Both time and frequency division duplexing are allowed. Frequency division duplexing allows for the migration from 3G systems, which are by and large based on frequency division duplexing. Time division duplexing allows for unpaired spectrum, so you don't have to have these spectrum pairs, so it's a more efficient use of your frequency spectrum potentially, and means that your channel characteristics are going to be the same in the uplink and downlink directions, and can allow for dynamic change to uplink and downlink capacity. But base stations have to synchronize to avoid cross-slot interference. But time division duplexing is seen as the way to go now. Okay, so that's LTE. Again, we have the use of OFDM and MIMO. We have the changes to the network to simplify the network, but also to allow it to interact with other network technologies, and we see the centrality of quality of service issues in the new network, sort of being indicative of or representative of the types of data that these networks anticipate carrying, so not just voice, but all the multimedia data as well. Oops. So LTE moves towards the 4G standards, so very high data rates. The all IP cores, heterogeneous networks. It doesn't meet them, but its follow-on standard, LTE Advanced, which essentially is further improvements to the LTE standards, do meet the IMT Advanced standards. And as you'll note, just looking at the uplink and downlink speeds, we have to, between LTE and LTE Advanced, we need a tenfold improvement in speeds. And so this is not solely, we're not solely able to provide this just with OFDM and MIMO. It won't get up to that sort of data rates. So additionally, LTE Advanced makes use of what's called carrier aggregation. And so to get the very high bandwidths, you aggregate multiple channels into sort of one higher bandwidth channel. And this can be done using either contiguous or non-contiguous spectrum. And so if you think essentially your spectrum efficiency tells you can get so many bits out of such and such a bandwidth, if you increase the bandwidth, then you're increasing your bit rate. And so that's one of the primary sort of advances for LTE Advanced. LTE Advanced makes a number of other changes to the network structure to try and improve signaling quality. The first of these is coordinated multipoint. And coordinated multipoint is a method of transmitting or receiving from user from user equipment using several base stations. And the idea here is that, you know, a user's grand as long as they're sitting right under the base station, but as they get to the edge of the cell, there's more difficulty in maintaining signal quality. And so in order to maintain the quality, they may communicate with a number of adjacent cells that they're sort of equidistant from, and then, you know, the signal's quality is enhanced by each transmission, sort of in a similar way to having spatial diversity. Okay. Obviously, this complicates scheduling and transmission control and handover issues as well, but that's just a processing issue. Another improvement that has been suggested, again to extend the range, is relaying. And here data is relayed between a base station and a mobile station through multi-hop communication. So it goes not directly to the base station, but through an intermediate relay node. And this relay node receives, demodulates, decodes, corrects, and retransmits the signal it receives. Okay, and so this is a way of either reducing your power consumption or transmitting, or again, sort of maintaining your quality as you go farther from the base station. There are two types of relay nodes proposed. One appears to the user to be like a base station, and in that case, the user communicates solely with the relay node. Then the relay node, again, passes these communications back to the real base station. In type 2 relay nodes, the relays are indistinguishable from the base station, so the base station can transmit some of the information, like the base station can transmit the control information, but then the user data will come from the relay. So they all sort of act as a single unit. So that's a very brief overview of the improvements made to UMTS, well, GSM, GPRS, UMTS, to arrive at a 4G standard. And again, I think it is very interesting to think of it in these evolutionary terms. So see what's changed and what's remained the same. Our final topic, which I will take up probably tomorrow, is WiMAX and 802.16m. And so WiMAX started out, again, it's a member of the IEEE 802 family, which is local and medium area networks, and it started out as a point-to-point broadband technology. And so its goal was always, again, to get these high data rates. So it would have been the pioneer in using techniques like OFDM and MIMO. It has been broadened to deal with mobility issues, and as such represents a competition, a competitor technology to the sort of telephony-based cellular technology, and 802.16e was certified as a 3G standard, and now 802.16m, Wireless MAN Advanced, has been certified as the second, next to LTE Advanced, 4G standard. So we will, I'll be, these lectures are not live, they're being Camtasia'd, so probably tomorrow I will finish that and it will be posted on Monday.